This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed. Welcome. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. Our hour of old-time radio crime begins with Crime Club this week. We'll hear their October 16th, 1947 episode titled Cupid Can Be Deadly. After that, it's Crime Classics and Mr. Clark's Skeleton and Mr. Aram's Closet. They like the long titles on that show. That one aired May 12th, 1954.
The Broadcasting System presents...
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Cupid can be deadly. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Cupid Can Be Deadly. The very unusual story of a dream that was made of the stuff that killed. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. The house in the hills of Westchester was big and rambling, like a medieval castle. And it was owned by the beautiful and temperamental Linda Barry, the celebrated actress. It was late Saturday night, and Paul Palmer, a Broadway columnist and one of the weekend guests, came quickly down the stairs. And as he made the right angle turn toward the library, he met Professor Caldwell, a psychologist, and another one of the guests.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Palmer. I didn't hear you coming.
I walk on my toes. Have you seen Toby?
Toby?
Miss Randolph.
Oh, yes. No, I haven't seen her in quite a while.
Where can that girl be?
Have you looked in her room?
Just now.
Well, I'm going out for a drive with Sam Winslow.
That phony private detective?
I'll look around outside if I should see Miss Randolph.
Yeah, tell her about me.
Well, of course. In the meantime, you might ask Miss Barry.
Where is she?
In the library. Now, if you don't mind.
I don't.
Well, thank you. I asked Mr. Winslow to be ready in 10 minutes. It's almost that now. Well, good luck, Mr. Palmer.
Why don't I stay home for a change?
Paul.
Linda, have you seen...
Yes?
What's the idea of the gun?
You'll find out.
Ah, the lady's mad.
You've got no idea how mad, honey.
You're sizzling.
Don't be clever.
I can't help it. Give me the gun.
No.
Give it to me. You can sizzle without it.
You had no right to do that, Paul.
Oh, it's done. Shall we go before an arbitration board?
You keyhole peeper.
Oh. Oh, a big one for my column. Linda Barry slaps a guest in her own house. And who was that guest? Your Broadway reporter.
That ought to make me the toast of the world. You can go home now, anytime you want.
Wait a minute.
I haven't got time.
We'll give it to you. Who was going to get that bullet?
Take your hand off that door, Paul.
Was it going to be your manager and half a heartthrob, Wally Brooks?
Paul?
Ah, then it was for the other half a heartthrob, Sam Winslow.
No.
You'll have to sock me again, honey. You're not leaving this room until... Oh, the lady's smiling.
Oh, you're such a fool.
Don't tell the guys in the other papers.
That bullet was for your girlfriend, Toby Randolph.
It's no use trying to talk me out of it, Wally. I'm going to get away from this place as soon as I can find Paul.
All right, Toby, you want to go, you can go, but why?
I don't like it here.
Meaning me?
No.
The house?
No.
Professor Caldwell's been lecturing you about the mine.
He doesn't bother me, Wally.
Then it must be on account of Sam Winslow.
Well...
That no good four-fletcher,
he's not the reason, Wally.
Oh?
I can handle him.
Say, you're not running away from Linda, are you?
I am.
But why?
I don't like the way she creeps up on me.
That's too bad, honey.
Huh?
See what I mean?
Walking in the garden, arm in arm. What a rosy picture.
What's this all about, Linda?
I'll bet you couldn't find such a beautiful setting anywhere. Even the moon is perfect tonight.
What on earth are you talking about?
Excuse me, Wally. I'm not sticking around to find
you're
out.
You're sticking around, Toby.
Hey!
And you're going to find out how I really feel about you. Let go of my hair!
Linda!
You're not going to leave this place alive!
Let go of her, Linda!
You take out of this, Wally!
Oh, get her out of my hair! She's killing me!
I said let go of her, Linda!
Ow!
Let go!
You're breaking my fingers!
Oh. I'll break them, Linda, if you don't get your hands off.
All right. Let go of me.
Now!
Thanks, Wally. Now I'll give her a sample of my
no,
brand.
No, you don't.
But she Toby. Got me from behind.
I don't care how she got you. But I want to know why. Well, Linda, why?
Nobody's making a fool out of me.
Nobody has to. What's that?
That's enough.
Just let me get at her. I'll show her how to pull hair.
Stop it! That goes for both of you.
Listen, Wally, anytime we need a referee...
Shut up, Toby. And stand over by that tree.
What about her?
I'll take care of her. All right, Linda. How was Toby making a fool out of you?
She wouldn't leave you alone.
What?
From the minute she got here with Paul, she's been trying to get her claws into you. And you left.
Are you nuts?
You didn't do a thing to stop her. I've been watching you. Both of you.
You are nuts.
It took you a long time to find out, Wally.
Shut up, Toby. Stay that way until I got this thing settled. Now, Linda, since when do I have to sign the book every time I look at another girl?
If you only look.
There's nothing between Toby and me. She's got Paul, and from what I know, she's completely satisfied. Am I right, Toby?
You're right.
Yeah. But you are not completely satisfied with me, Linda, are you?
I never said I was.
Well, you never had to. We've been engaged for exactly 1 year. How many proteges have you had in that year?
Don't be low, dear.
5. And now it's that cheap chiseling Sam Winslow, a private detective, the worst of the lot.
I like to help people.
Sure, but why are they always men?
Coincidence.
Oh, cut it out, will you? You're not talking to someone behind a bib.
Darling... I didn't know you were jealous.
I'm not. I've never said a thing to you.
Third party here. Can we wait?
No, I don't care who's listening. I'm fed up and I'm...
Yes?
Yes, and you can get yourself another manager, too. The less I see of you, the better.
You're raving.
We'll see about that. Come on, Toby. Let's find Paul and get out of here.
I'm on our way.
Just a minute, Wally. You're not walking out on me.
Save your breath.
I said you're not, dear.
Listen.
When there's any air to be given, I give it. And, Wally, I'm not giving you the air yet.
You don't seem to get the idea, Linda.
I happen to like you, darling. Enough to marry you tomorrow. You either marry me tomorrow or you go to prison.
But what's that?
I'll repeat it for you. Slowly.
What have you got up your sleeve?
The ace of trumps, and it's been there for a long time.
Okay. Show it.
You're a thief, Wally.
What?
And I'm the only one who could keep you out of jail.
You'd better start explaining, Linda.
All right. If you don't mind the crowd.
Well, let Toby hear it.
You've been forging my name to checks.
Have I?
$70,000 worth. You know my signature, and you've been doing a perfect job.
Where are those checks?
You'll see them in court.
I see them now.
Hey.
Where are they, Linda?
Oh, stop it. You're twisting my arm.
Come on, baby. Produce.
You'll never get them, Wally. You could kill me, but you'll never get those checks.
Well, it's about time, Professor. What kept you?
I didn't realize you were waiting, Mr. Winslow.
You said 10 minutes, didn't we? I've been sitting in this car for 20.
I'm sorry, but I met Mr. Palmer and... He was agitated about the disappearance of his lady friend, so I thought...
Tried some psychology.
Well, not quite. I looked around for her just to be helpful.
You're the type, aren't you?
Well...
Yeah. Okay, let's go for that drive.
Mr. Winslow, would you mind if we didn't?
What's the idea?
Well, it's rather late, and I can talk to you here just as well.
Okay.
It's about... Well, I think you know.
Me and Linda?
Yes.
You don't approve?
Miss Barry is my patient. Her welfare is my concern.
I'm not good for it, huh?
I think you ought to leave at once. I'm sorry, I was only trying to relieve a delicate situation. Miss Barry and Mr. Brooks are engaged to be married.
I read that in Paul Palmer's column a year ago.
They should be married, Mr. Winslow. But as long as you're in the picture...
Stop right there, pal. If Linda wants to wash me out, she can do it any time.
Well...
The fact is, she wants me in. So that's where I stay.
Would you marry her? You won't. You don't love her.
No, I'm not exactly indifferent to her charms, Professor.
She has a lot of money.
You catch on fast, don't you?
Suppose I were to tell her that.
You want to live, don't you?
Mr. Winslow, are you...
You want to go right on psychologizing dames for big fat fees? You can't do that when you're dead.
You're not threatening me, young man. I know Miss Barry has given you money. And I know that she's made you the beneficiary of one of her largest life insurance policies.
You know a lot, pal.
I also know that you've been poisoning her mind against Mr. Brooks. But you'll never get another chance. When I get through telling Miss Barry the truth about you...
Nice speech, Professor. Now take a deep breath.
What?
Hold it. Hold it. It might have to last you a lifetime.
Here's your room, Toby. Good night. I'll see you in the morning.
Paul, I don't know why I listened to you. After what Linda said and did to me tonight...
She's a crackpot, but she's loaded with material. At least two columns out of one weekend.
All right. But I don't like the idea of sleeping in her house.
Good night, sweetheart. Pleasant dreams.
Rosa!
It's me, Paul. Let me in.
What's the matter, Toby?
Don't ask me now. Just let me in.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm getting my bathroom.
Won't you please hurry?
I'm doing the best I can. Getting into a bathrobe takes time. All right.
Oh, Paul, darling.
What's the matter?
I had the most awful dream.
What?
I dreamed I was Cupid riding a black horse.
Toby, do you realize it's only 5 o'clock in the morning?
I couldn't sleep a wink after that. Every time I closed my eyes, there was that black horse and Linda.
Oh, my aching life.
It was terrible. I was sitting on the horse and I kept shooting arrows into her heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Poisoned arrows. Every time I took one out of the quiver, I dipped it into a bottle of cyanide that was tied around the horse's neck.
Go back to bed, sugar. What you need is some sleep.
But I can't.
Darling.
Oh, you've got to help me. Let's go down to the living room.
But, honey, why?
That's where the dream took place.
You expect to find a black horse down there?
I don't know what I expect to find. But if you don't come with me...
Get that look out of your eyes, Angel.
Paul, I'm desperate. I've never been so upset before.
Now, take my arm, Cupid. We're off to catch a dream.
I wouldn't bother you, ordinarily.
Sometimes I wish you would. Hunting we will go. Hunting we will go. Watch your step, the stairs.
Thanks. If I could only be as calm as you.
My arm would feel fine.
Hmm?
You're digging your nails into it, and it's not even responsible for your dream.
I'm sorry.
I'll bet you are.
But I am.
You never liked this arm anyway. Now tell me the truth.
Paul, that light.
Where?
Under the living room door.
Okay, okay. So you're crazy about my arm. Stay here.
Oh.
Do you want to get knocked down by a horse?
Going with you.
Good Lord.
Linda, on the floor, with an arrow in her chest. I killed her, Paul. Don't try to tell me I didn't.
You didn't.
Oh, what's the use? You'd say anything to make me feel good.
Now, listen, honey.
I'm a killer, and no amount of coaxing is going to convince me that I'm not.
But dreams don't make murderers.
How do you know I was dreaming?
You said so.
Maybe that's what I thought, but actually... Goodbye, Paul. It's been nice knowing you.
Where are you going?
The police will have to know about this, and I'm going to phone them.
No, you're not. Put it down, Toby.
I've got to give myself up.
Okay, then I'll put it down.
Oh.
Sorry, your hand was in the way. Now, you'll do me one favor. Don't tell anyone about your dream.
We're going to have the police in on this, aren't we?
Sure, but not until I've got you straightened out. Come on.
Where?
Out for a walk. Let somebody else
find... Good morning.
Huh? Ah, Professor Caldwell.
Up bright and early, aren't we? I always say there's nothing like the country air to... Good heavens. Behind you, Miss Barry.
We found her that way.
An arrow in her chest. Right. Her pulse... Mr. Palmer, do you realize she's been murdered?
I'm beginning to.
Who did this?
We don't know.
I did, Professor.
Toby, you, Miss Randolph.
You'd better send for the police. I'll tell them everything.
Well, as long as you've gone this far, why not tell it to Professor Caldwell? He's a psychologist.
Is this a problem in psychology?
She had a dream.
It was more than that, Paul. I saw the whole thing. The living room, Linda, and I was shooting arrows into her heart.
But you were riding on a black horse. Professor, do you see a black horse in this room?
Very, very interesting.
She was also dressed up as Cupid.
She was?
Forget it.
Hmm. Miss Randolph, you had a dream in which you saw yourself as Cupid murdering Miss Barry?
So I thought.
But there was no romantic conflict between you and Miss Barry?
Who said there wasn't?
Toby, for Pete's sake.
Oh, let her talk, Mr. Palmer.
She'll hang herself.
We'll see about that. Go on, Miss Randolph.
Last night, Linda accused me of trying to take Wally Brooks away from her. We had a hair-pulling match.
Amazing. The most unusual dream coincidence I've ever heard of.
Professor!
Now, don't be alarmed, Mr. Palmer. This young lady is quite innocent.
You mean it couldn't have happened as I told it?
Certainly not. You're not Cupid and there's no horse. But...
Yes?
Well, on the other hand, Miss Barry is dead. There is an arrow through her heart. This young lady is quite innocent.
You mean it couldn't have happened as I told it?
Certainly not. You're not Cupid and there's no horse. But...
Yes?
Well, on the other hand, Miss Barry is dead. There is an arrow through her heart. That can only mean that if you're guilty, Miss Randolph, then you must be a somnambulist.
Oh, good Lord.
What now, Toby?
Paul, as a child, I used to walk in my sleep regularly.
You don't care what you do to yourself.
Listen, Professor, I've got an idea.
I'm afraid we need one, Mr. Palmer.
If you hypnotized Toby, we could really find out what she did last night, couldn't we?
We could.
All right. Then hypnotize. Sit down, Toby. We're going to work.
But, Paul, I told
you. I want to know the truth.
And I've got it.
You mean I don't have to be hypnotized?
No.
All you've got to do is remember what happened after Linda pulled your hair last night.
She...
What you told me just before you went to your room.
Wally said he was through, and she... Of course.
She accused Wally of forging her name to checks.
Mr. Palmer, do you realize what you're saying?
I'm saying what Toby said Linda said. And she was there. Come on. We'll ask Wally.
Don't knock yourselves out, kiddies.
Sam.
Yeah. I'll bet she never expected to die that way off stage.
How long have you been here, Sam?
Not long enough to embarrass anybody. Why?
What made you come down? It's only 6 o'clock.
I get restless sometimes. Why?
You've got a reputation for waking up with a dinner bell.
Oh. You think it was me, huh?
It could have been, Mr. Winslow.
I'm going to hear from the professor.
Mr. Palmer, this man is the beneficiary of a $50,000 insurance policy taken out by Miss Barry.
Well, I'll be...
Not anymore, Toby. Okay, Sam. You tell me.
I had influence with the babe. I was her type.
That's not telling me, pal.
She hired me to find out where her dough was going. Checks she didn't remember signing. Then she took a shine to me. What was I going to do?
Now, listen,
that's
Sam.
Exactly what I did. After I found out who was signing those checks with Linda's Johanna Hancock. It was her boyfriend, Wally Brooks.
I know all about that.
Great. Now, here's something you don't know. Where's Wally?
What?
His room's next to mine. I heard him going out about 10 minutes ago. That's what woke me up.
That's ridiculous. Mr. Brooks has a car in the garage, and we heard no car.
There it is, Professor. Well, what do you say, Paul?
They'll send for the police. They know all the answers. Oh, well, how about some breakfast, Toby?
No, thanks, Paul.
It'll be an hour before we hit New York, and I... Oh, look, there's a nice quiet place just around the next intersection. The food's good.
I don't feel like eating, Paul.
What's the matter with you?
Why didn't you let me tell the police about my dream?
Oh, it's that dream again.
I killed Linda.
Listen, honey, the police know how to analyze a crime, and they suspect Wally.
Just because he disappeared.
He didn't take a thing that belonged to him, not even his socks.
It doesn't prove he's a murderer.
He's been forging Linda's name to checks, and she found him out.
He wouldn't have killed her for that. She was ready to marry
him.
Now,
listen, honey.
I won't. Wally's not a killer. And I don't believe he was ever a thief.
But the police found the checks.
Oh, what's the use? You've made up your mind to cheat the law, and you don't care who dies, as long as it isn't me.
You don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going to prove it once and for all.
If you only could.
We'll turn around, and then we'll hit right for police headquarters.
Why?
In your dream, Cupid was dipping the arrows into a bottle of cyanide.
Yes?
So far, there's been no mention of cyanide by the police or the coroner. I'm going to insist on a lab test of the arrow point.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But while that's being done, Angel, you keep your mouth shut about that dream. Understand?
That's a very unusual request, Mr. Palmer.
I'm an unusual guy, Captain.
Yeah?
You read my column?
Sometimes.
And you want to know how I work. I do a thorough job on everything and everybody.
Yeah?
Captain, it wouldn't take much of your time to do a lab test on that arrow. Please.
Why should you be interested, Miss Randolph?
I... Well, you see...
Frankly, I don't.
Paul, I'm going to tell him.
Toby.
I can't live with it anymore. I've got to talk.
You've done too much already. Let's get out of here.
Now, wait a minute. She's got to talk, and I'm here to listen. Go ahead, lady.
I think I killed Linda Barry.
Uh-huh.
Paul and Professor Caldwell have been trying to tell me I couldn't have done it. But I know different.
Sure, here's a pencil and some paper. You write it down.
Nothing doing, Captain.
Now, you stay out of this, Mr. Palmer.
But you don't understand. You can't take a confession from her.
You wait outside.
Oh, for Pete's sake, why don't you listen?
Outside, mister.
All right. But you'll never convict her. She claims there was cyanide on the tip of the arrow.
There was.
What?
Here's the coroner's report. You want to read it?
Good Lord, but she only dreamed about it.
Now, listen, you. If you make one more attempt to influence this lady, I'll...
I've got to use that phone.
Are you getting out of here?
Yes, yes, but let me call Professor Caldwell, the psychologist. He's an expert on dreams.
Call him from the other room.
Okay, but hold up that confession until he gets here, will you?
The other room, mister. Now, here's the door.
Thanks for the assist, Captain. I never would have made it without your help. Hurry up, hurry up.
Hello?
Now, Professor Caldwell.
Yes?
This is Paul Palmer.
Oh, Mr. Palmer, I'm so glad you phoned. How soon can you get here?
No, I can't. I want you
but
to...
But you must. Mr. Brooks came in a few minutes ago.
What?
And without a word of warning, he began to beat up Mr. Winslow. If you don't get out here as soon as you can, there'll be another murder in this house.
Wally? He came back?
Please, Mr. Palmer, as soon as you can.
It'll take me at least 15 minutes.
That won't do any good.
It'll have to. Now, listen, Professor. Don't let Wally get away. I wanted to meet a certain captain of the police with a first-hand story of why he disappeared.
Is that you, Mr. Palmer?
It's me, Professor. Where's Wally?
You said you'd be here in 15 minutes. It's more than half an hour since you called.
I had a flat. Where's Wally Brooks?
We took him up to his room about a half an hour ago.
You took him up?
It means we dragged him up.
Sam, what are you doing on your feet? But, Professor, you told me...
It was phenomenal, Mr. Palmer. I went back to the living room after I spoke to you, and there was... I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was standing, and Wally wasn't.
But I thought that
So it seemed, pal. He took me by surprise, but all I had to get over was one punch. And when that was settled...
Okay, let's go up and have a talk with him.
If he's conscious.
Sam, don't flatter yourself. You don't hit that hard.
My pal.
Not by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh.
Professor... Would you say that Sam is human?
Definitely not. A species of two-legged animal. If I had my way,
Which you haven't.
Okay, we'll settle this later. Listen, Wally.
Hey, what do you know? The guy came too.
Not so as you can notice it.
Well, we left him on the bed. If he didn't come too, how'd he get in that chair?
Come here, Professor.
What seems to be wrong, Mr. Palmer?
Check him. I've got an idea. He's dead.
Dead? Mr. Winslow.
Now, don't look at me. I couldn't have killed him with one punch. I don't hit that hard.
He is dead, Mr. Palmer.
Now, wait a minute.
Shut up, Sam. How can a guy tell without a stethoscope?
Mr. Brooks has no pulse, and there's no action in his heart that I can hear.
Let's call a doctor.
I am a doctor, Mr. Winslow. My specialty happens to be psychology, but that doesn't mean that
Never mind that, Professor. I know what killed Wally.
What's that?
Poison. From this tiny bottle.
Bottle? But I don't see
it. He's clutching it in his hand, and he's got a grip on it I can't break.
Leave him alone, pal. The guy committed suicide. I want the cops to find that bottle in his hand.
But I've got to know whether it contains cyanide. Come on, Professor. You should know how to flex muscles.
I'm afraid it would be impossible in this case, Mr. Palmer.
Why?
Obviously, rigor mortis is set in.
I'm not giving up. If that bottle contains cyanide, then... What'd you say, Professor?
Rigor mortis, Mr. Palmer. The rigidity of the muscles that occurs after death.
Yeah. Sam, close that door.
What's the idea?
Close it. I want to ask the professor a few questions with no way out.
Okay. You've got me guessing, pal.
Mr. Palmer, what is the meaning of this?
I'll let you know, Professor. Sam, get on that phone. Call the Medical Society of New York.
What?
Don't look so dumb. Ask them if they got a member by the name of Professor Caldwell. What's your name, Professor?
You're very clever, Mr. Palmer.
It's about time. But it didn't take you long to get that gun out of your pocket, did it?
Does it matter?
Why did you kill Linda?
She made a startling discovery.
The checks were forged?
They weren't forged, Mr. Palmer.
Now, look. Oh, no. No, I see what you mean. She signed them herself while she was under your influence.
Hey, what goes with this guy?
An electric chair, Sam. He's a phony psychologist, and Linda was one of his patients. Each time she came to his office, he got her just in the right mood to be hypnotized. Then he'd tell her to write a check and sign it. They were all made out to cash, weren't they, Professor?
Of course. And she cashed them for me while she was in that right mood.
But why did you kill her?
I told you.
Can't you figure it out, pal? She accused Wally. Now, suppose she had the guy arrested. You think DAs are dumb?
No.
They investigate everybody. And what do they find out? This guy's a phony doctor.
Yeah. Remind me to like you the next time we meet.
Thanks.
Now, Professor, about Toby...
You hypnotized her, too. And you induced her to have that dream.
Why? The young lady was a perfect subject after her quarrel with Miss Barry.
But how did you get to her? I took her to the door of the room and I saw her go in.
She came out later. The poor child was very disturbed. Naturally, she needed attention.
Dirty hypocrite.
Take it easy, Paul. The gun. Yeah. You changed your mind about Toby, Professor, when Wally disappeared. When he came back, you set him up as the perfect suicide.
It's quite simple. Such an easy way out. No trial, no investigation. The suspect committed suicide. Q.E.D.
Q.E.D. Well.
Yeah. So that's why you tried to get rid of me, Professor.
I think I'll go now, gentlemen.
You didn't want a private detective around while you were fixing a murder and a framer.
Goodbye, Mr. Winslow.
You even tried to put the framer on me. You know, Professor, that makes me mad.
Really? Would you like me to put you out of your misery?
I'm standing here by the door, Professor. If you want to get out, you'll have to come through me.
You insist on being a fool, don't you?
No, Professor. Mr. Palmer, present. You shouldn't have forgotten about me, not even for a minute. Bad psychology.
Hold it, Paul. I'll take the gun.
I'll take it, Sam. One more twist. That's all mine. Now, Professor...
I have nothing to say to you, Mr. Palmer.
He doesn't like me, Sam.
Oh, I'm sick about it. You think I ought to kill myself?
You're a hard nut to crack, chum. Okay, you take one arm and I'll take the other. We'll give this guy a lift down to police headquarters that won't be exactly psychological. Hunting we will go. Hunting we will
Paul.
Go. Yeah? Yes, Toby?
How did you decide that Professor Caldwell was the murderer?
He said rigor mortis.
Yes, that's what you told me before, but how did you really decide?
Wally couldn't have been dead more than half an hour. Rigor mortis takes from 6 to 8 hours to set in. Any doctor knows that.
Any real doctor. But what made Wally so rigid?
Hypnotism.
Hmm?
Did you ever see people hypnotized?
Several times, but... Of course. Their bodies become so rigid they couldn't even be bent.
There you have it.
Thanks, I don't want it.
Death doesn't relax those muscles. They stay that way.
I still don't want it.
Mm, you're hard to please, young lady. Mm-hmm. What do you want?
Would you really like to know?
Sure.
I want something to eat. I'm hungry.
And so closes tonight's story, Cupid Can Be Deadly. Stedman Coles wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Sidney Smith played the part of Paul Palmer. Virginia Dwyer was Toby Randolph. Cameron Prudhomme was Professor Caldwell. Helen Shields played Linda Barry. Larry Haynes was Sam Winslow. And Shirling Oliver was heard as Wally Brooks. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is a crime club. I'm the librarian. Next week? I'm sorry, we won't be here next week. No, this is the last program in the current series. Yes, we're sorry too. Of course there'll be something here next week. Racket smashers. Yes. At the same time and over most of these same stations. You'll be listening? Fine. I'll tell them to look for you.
This program came from New York. This is the last broadcast in the current Crime Club series. In its place, the Mutual Broadcasting System will present the exciting real-life crime drama, Racket Smashers. Don't fail to tune in at this time next week over most of these stations for the true criminal cases of Racket Smashers. Stay tuned now for another mutual favorite, Quiet Please, which follows in just a moment. This is the world's largest network serving more than 450 radio stations the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. The sheriff of Knaresborough places a skull on the table. Now a fibula. Now a tibia. These bones have recently been dug up from St. Robert's Cave, a favorite trysting place of the town. And now he puts a femur on the table and the skeleton is almost completely reconstructed. A jawbone. Fingers and toes. And just let them lie there. The sheriff can see for himself who the skeleton is.
Daniel Clark, all right. So that's what he's been doing these 15 years.
Tonight, my report to you on Mr. Clark's skeleton in Mr. Aram's closet. The noise it made. Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland. The Huxley Seminary for Genteel Females is extinct now, and a moral might be drawn from that. Last year, on a stroll in London, its campus was defined for me. A triangle bounded now by a barber shop, a shear sharpener, and a free kitchen for a type of wanderer. Gone is the ivy, gone the girlish laughter, vanished the sound of silver bells that spilled the young ladies from classroom of Greek to classroom of how to conduct oneself at 5 o'clock tea. Silent now the small excitements of spelling bees. Only the imagined echo heard of Mr. Aram's Latin class. The problem, for example, of the Latin's preference for the use of the gerundive.
Concilium urbium capiendarum.
Concilium urbium capiendarum. A plan of capturing the cities.
Is that right, Mr. Aram?
And it was so important that it be right. For Janice was 17. And it was necessary that Mr. Aram approve her Latin, for this was her plan of capturing Mr. Aram.
Why, Stabeden, Stabeda, I do hope I'm right.
Of course you are.
And listen.
Yes.
When an adjective modifies two or more nouns of different gender, the agreement is as follows. The attributive adjective agrees with the nearest noun.
As, for example, multi-herbes. Opida, Vicky Gray?
Yes.
You're a very good student, Janice.
Thank you.
I think now you've made up all the time you've missed so that I shall not have to tutor you in private anymore.
Mr. Aram.
Yes, Janice.
I love you.
Child.
I love you truly.
Homo laudandus est.
Oh, please don't try to prove anything to me in Latin, Mr. Aram.
Child, many girls fall in love with their teachers.
Oh, every girl in school is in love with you, Mr. Aram. And I love you the most.
That's very sweet of you.
And I don't care that you're married.
No, please, Jenny.
Look.
Huh?
This poem I've written to you in the corner of my book. Oh, please read it.
All right.
Well, I know there's some mistakes in syntax, but...
I think you've expressed yourself quite clearly.
Sincerely, too.
I think you'd better go now, Johnny.
Don't you think I'm beautiful?
Lovely. Truly lovely.
Oh, then you do love me. You're just afraid that
no.
You're...
I'm an older man, Johnny. Then my wife and I are blessed with happiness and love. And I cherish the life I have with her.
Then what of me?
Why, if you truly love me, you will suffer a broken heart. It will make you more beautiful still. Now go.
Now, this was no singular occurrence in the academic life of Mr. Eugene Aram. The young ladies, each genteel female of them, were caught in the web of his tender and warm charm, though never caught in his embrace. For Mr. Aram was a good man, an understanding man, a scholar of Greek and Latin and Hebrew, and a gentleman in any language. He was 38 years old, and for the last dozen years, his chief devotion was Ellen, his wife. For example, that very night.
Close your eyes.
Very well.
Hold out your hands.
All right.
Now, open them. Well, Eugene.
If you only knew how much I've wanted this volume. My dear.
Yes, dear.
To have bought this, how you must have scrimped.
Such a horrid word, scrimped. I call it saving for your joy.
Ah, you're my beloved.
Yes, I know. How was school today?
Well...
You're smiling. What happened? Tell me.
One of my Latin students.
Oh, again?
This one thought to woo me with an interesting Latin construction.
Oh, poor child.
Oh, well, it will pass with her as it passes with Gloria.
Only to fall prey to Mr. Black in manners and numbers section.
Oh, come now, let us not judge.
You're too kind.
Well, there's not time in this life for malice.
Too gentle. Too good.
Truly? Do you believe that?
No, of course not. You're my husband, and you're my love. Come, sit you down to your meal.
And this was no singular homecoming in the domestic life of Eugene Aram. His wife, the whole being of her, was caught in the web of his tenderness and his love. And she, unique among women, was caught in his embrace. Some other things to know about Mr. Aram. Though his salary was a small one, he gave a considerable portion of it to his church and to charities. Each holiday would see him bringing baskets to the poor, and his name was breathed in prayers all over the neighborhood. How, you might ask, did he get along at work? With his employers, for instance.
Mr. Adam, of all the tutors here at Huxley, you are truly a prize.
Well, thank you, Mr. Huxley.
I have here a letter from the proctors of the university, Mr. Adam.
Oh, yes?
It caused a stir, it seems.
Oh?
Having propounded the proof that Latin and Greek are cousin languages and not mother and daughter languages.
Oh, yes, I wrote a paper to this effect and sent it to
them. I applaud you.
Oh, thank you.
You're a good man.
Thank you, sir.
A true scholar and...
Dean Huxley?
Yes?
Then this other gentleman must be Eugene Adam.
Am I not right?
Who are you, sir? Morbank, Sheriff of Knaresborough.
Yes?
I've come for Mr. Aram.
Come for him?
To arrest him.
Arrest him?
For murder.
Sheriff.
Yes, sir, Mr. Aram.
Will you loosen my shackle, please, for a moment so that I may dip a snuff?
Of course. All right.
Yes.
Too tight?
No. Sheriff.
Yes, sir, Mr. Aram.
You said...
Murder. Which is the reason you are being taken to Knaresborough in chains.
Murder of a Mr. Daniel Clark.
That's right, sir.
Who is Mr. Daniel Clark?
He was the shoemaker.
Why am I called to attest to his murder?
You've been named.
By whom?
Mr. Theodore Hausman.
Hausman?
Hausman.
Who's he?
You don't know him?
No.
He said he was a good friend of yours. 15 years ago, that is.
I never heard of him.
Well, sir, this is the way it was. Last month or so ago, a workman was digging in the limestone pits in Knaresborough. You remember where they are? You remember Knaresborough, don't you, sir?
It's been so long since I lived there.
Ah, trust it, sir. 15 years. Well, to go on.
Yes, please.
Well, sir, this workman was digging and comes across a skeleton. Now, the townspeople there couldn't for their life figure out who the skeleton was, since pride is taken in resting people proper in the graveyard.
Yes, I can see what the problem was.
Well, sir, someone remembered that 15 years ago, a certain Daniel Clark, shoemaker, disappeared. And it was remembered, too, that Daniel Clark had a close friend still about named Theodore Hausman.
And you spoke with Mr. Hausman, I take it?
Yes, I did, sir. And Mr. Hausman proved conclusively that the skeleton taken from the lime pits was not Mr. Daniel Clark at all.
Then I don't understand.
But he took us to St. Robert's Cave, showed us where to dig, and sure enough...
Another skeleton.
Right. Right you are.
Which you identified as Mr. Clark's remains.
Right. Right you are.
With certainty.
Of course, sir.
How do you know it was Mr. Clark?
Why, who else would it be?
Oh, I'm sure I don't know.
Besides...
Besides what?
This skeleton had a skull bashed in.
What does that prove?
That it was Mr. Clark.
But how do you know?
Why, who else could it be? Come along now.
Underline his logic, the sheriff on the dusty ride from London to Knaresborough would repeat himself.
Why? Who else could it be?
And smile smugly. When the carriage reached Knaresborough, the beloved schoolmaster was stripped of his clothes, given some rags to wear, and was thrown into the Knaresborough jail. 15 minutes after this happened, he had a visitor, the town stapler, a man chosen by the town folk to staple desperate criminals to the jail wall. Mr. Aram was secured in such a way as hardly to be able to move at all. Certainly he was immobile to such a degree that he could not dip a snuff he dearly loved. 15 minutes after he was stapled, Mr. Aram had another visitor.
You remember me, Eugene?
Vaguely, I think. Turn to the light.
Well, remember me from when you used to live here?
I think. I'm not sure.
Teddy.
Teddy.
Teddy Hausman.
Oh, you're the one...
Who named you murderer.
I see.
First, I was named. Went to trial, too. But I was acquitted. You know why I was acquitted, Eugene?
Why?
Because I named you. I'm speaking against you at the trial, Eugene. I'm giving evidence against you. I'm the reason you're going to hang. Is there light enough, Eugene? Can you see who I am? Can you remember me?
Listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Hyland, and his report to you on Mr. Clark's skeleton in Mr. Aram's closet, the noise it made. About Yorkshire County, England, for in it, almost athwart the boundaries of East and West Riding, lies Knaresborough. Well, Yorkshire is a county rich in historical associations. The Romans were here, and the Danes, as well as the Celts and the Normans and the Northumbrians. So you see, it's really one of the most invaded places in the world. As a matter of fact, there was a time there among foreign armies when Yorkshire County was a standing joke. Roman roads can be seen, as well as ruins of all types. And caves are constantly found with artifacts and shards and bones. And in such a cave, the bones of Daniel Clark.
I'm sure it's Daniel Clark. For I remember when Eugene Aram dug a hole and put him there 15 years ago.
If it's not Daniel Clark, then who else is it?
Hit him over the head with a shovel and buried him, Eugene Aram did.
Of course it's Daniel Clark. Who else could it be?
But my husband is such a good man.
Did you know him 15 years ago, Mrs. Aram?
No. No, I didn't.
When did you meet him?
12 years ago. In London.
How?
I was to market, and he followed me home.
Did he?
And he walked up the steps behind me.
Did he?
And I turned, and I was about to tell him to hie away. But he closed my mouth with a kiss.
Did he?
Yes.
Then what kind of a man would do that now? Would a gentleman do it, I ask?
My husband is a gentleman and romantic. And I wanted him to kiss me.
Did he tell you where he was from?
From Knaresborough, he said. Come to London to study and to teach and to take wife. And he said he needed to take wife before he could study or teach.
Did he say out about a man named Daniel Clark?
He spoke of poets, not shoemakers.
Did he say about a man named Theodore Hausman?
He spoke of philosophers, not liars.
Did he? Did he now?
Intimate of poets and philosophers.
Is he? Is he now?
Indeed, Mr. Arab is. A scholar himself, for listen what he has done.
What?
Self-taught he is in Latin and Greek and Hebrew, as well as knowledgeable in other Sanskrit languages, as well as knowing history and doing sums without a back of board. And he writes in a hand elegant and fine, as well as propounding theories as to the relation of one language to another. Cousins, he called Latin and Greek, not mother and daughter, as do Heffel and Roth.
Does he now?
Beloved by all.
So?
Kindly and admired.
Yet?
Yet what?
It looks as if he is a murderer.
No. No, I'll never believe it.
No. No, I'll never believe it.
And why not, miss?
Because I'm his Latin pupil.
Yes, yes, I know.
And I offered him my love.
Did you? Did you now?
Yes. And he did not accept it.
And why not?
Because he's a good man. And he has a wife.
And you say he could not kill.
Oh, no. Not such a gentleman.
You admire gentleness.
No more. It's broken my heart.
Sheriff Mobank went back to Knaresborough with definite impressions that Eugene Aram was loved by one and all, and that he was a mild man, and that no one would believe he could commit a crime so horrendous as murder. And nevertheless, Eugene Aram was brought to trial, and the greater part of the trial was devoted to Theodore Hausman's testimony. And this is the story he told. 15 years ago, he said, he and Eugene Aram had been friendly with Daniel Clark, the shoemaker. And one night, when they were all together, Daniel said,
I have an idea, gentlemen.
Concerning what, Danny?
Concerning a way to make us rich.
Do you now, Danny?
How? Well, I'll tell you. You know of my wife?
That she comes into fortune.
You're a lucky one, Danny.
Oh, but she's been coming into fortune now for over a year. And I'm still making shoes for the folks of Knaresborough. But this idea now.
Tell us. Tell us, Danny.
Now, all the shopsmiths of Knaresborough know that one day I come into a sum of money.
True, true.
And all I've to do is to buy on credit. An advance, so to speak, until my wife inherits her fortune.
Now, that's an idea if I ever heard one.
And on credit, you could buy the finest clothes.
For all of us.
Jewels.
For all of us.
Silver things.
For all of us. For me.
For me?
For me.
For all of us. And then we could go to London.
And live the fancy life.
And beguile the London ladies.
Where are you from, you handsome lads, they'll say. From Yorkshire, ma'am, we'll say, and give us a kiss.
And they'll do it.
They'll want to.
Because we'll have money.
And be dressed fine.
Then do it, Danny. Do your idea. Do your plan.
Danny.
What?
What of your wife?
When we're in London, she'll be here to pay the bills. When she gets her inheritance. When she gets it.
And Hausman went on with his story. He told how Daniel Clark went to the shopkeeper's. And from Mr. Chesney, he got several services of pure silver plate, and on credit, mind you. And from Mr. Malcolm, the jeweler, a fistful of diamonds and pearls, and for Mr. Fivek, the tailor, garments of leather and garments of brocade. And all this and more he brought to them, and ales and wines to have a party. And do you know where they had the party? Teddy said they had the party in St. Robert's Cave.
Oh, it was easy.
Tell us, Danny, that.
Oh, I told Mr. Chesney that I only wanted one silver service. He insisted I take three. I told Mr. Malcolm I was just looking about. And he asked me, wasn't I the lad whose wife is coming into a fortune soon as the court allowed? And I said, yes. He pressed a handful of diamonds and pearls on me. Oh. And Mr. Five, the greediest of them all, bolts of brocade and leather he piled me high with.
What a fortune is here.
Oh, let us drink, and then we'll go to London. And then we'll...
Danny.
Oh, I like you, Eugene.
Oh?
Warm friend. Oh, what a kind, gentle, warm friend you are.
Danny.
Good friend. Why? Why are you laughing? The trick the shadows make in this cave.
Oh?
As if you're holding high a shovel above my head. As if...
Well, now, I believe you've killed Danny, Eugene.
To have cheated his wife like that.
He was a cheater, all right.
You take half and I'll take half of what he cheated her of.
And what will you do with him?
Bury him. Bury him. Bury him.
And so Teddy Hausman finished his story. Then, you remember, the sheriff walked over to a table in the courtroom.
My lord, this is the skull we found. The fibia, the tibia. The femur, the jawbone. These are the fingers and toes. This is Daniel Clark, all right. Who else would it be? As sheriff of Knaresborough, I've been asking that all about, and no one can give me answer.
Oh, it's Daniel Clark, all right. Well, my name isn't Teddy Hausman. And Eugene Aram put the side of the shovel to him as true as I stand.
And what have you to say, Eugene Aram?
My lord, I labor not with guilt, but with perplexity. For my whole conduct in life contradicts every particular of this indictment. I concerted no schemes of fraud, projected no violence, injured no man's person or property. My days were honestly laborious, my nights intensely studious. It is deserving of attention, my lord, that no person, after a temperate life, plunges into the very depths of evil. A man is never corrupted at once. Villainy is progressive, step by step. Therefore, you cannot believe that a man such as I committed this most hideous of all crimes. Permit me, my lord, to observe a little upon the bones which have been discovered and laid upon this table by the sheriff. It is said that these are the skeleton of a man. But is there any certain known proof which distinguishes the sex of human bones? Perhaps at some future time, scientists will be able to tell the bones of a male from those of a female, but not so today. Now, here is a human skull produced, which is fractured. But was this the cause of death, or was it the effect of natural decay? If it was violence, was that violence before or after death? In May 1732, the remains of William, Lord Archbishop of the province, were taken up and the bones of the skull were found broken. Yet certainly he died by no violence offered to him, for we all know he died serenely in his sleep. More, such a deed as I am accused of is wholly repugnant to every part of my life. I put myself upon the candor, the justice and the humanity of your lordship, and upon yours, gentlemen of the jury.
Eugene Aram, having been found guilty by a jury of your peers, it is the sentence of this court that you be placed in Knaresborough prison, alone, so that you may commune with your soul and ask peace of your Maker. And from this place be taken to the gallows, and there hanged until you are dead. And your body shall then be delivered to the surgeons. May heaven rest your soul.
How can they hang you, Eugene? The judge himself said that yours was one of the most clever speeches he'd ever heard. I know you didn't kill that man, and all of England knows it. They're forming committees.
People are kind.
Good news, Eugene. I've gotten up a petition. Scholars and teachers, we're banding together, and we'll save you. You have nothing to fear.
That is wonderful of you people. Humanity. Another victory will be yours.
Hello, Mr. Aram. You remember me, do you not? Janice, your Latin pupil. I'm so out of breath, I can hardly tell you. We've gotten up a paper, all kinds of signatures, boys and girls, students from all over England. Oh, certainly they won't hang you now.
As you no doubt have noticed, we are left now with an unexplained skeleton, the first one which sent the sheriff to Teddy Hausman. Well, we're left with it. It has never been identified, and nor exactly why Teddy Hausman was acquitted. Wherever true crime fanciers get together and the case of Eugene Aram is mentioned, there is, without fail, a discussion as to whether or not he was truly guilty. And nevertheless, Eugene Aram mounted the scaffold June 12, 1758. Poised there, he was about to deliver another speech of eloquence when... And needless to say, everyone felt sorry for him. People from all over wept. Oh, such a nice man.
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about our next crime classic. Mr. Aram's Closet, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Ben Wright was heard as Mr. Aram. Featured in the cast were Betty Harford, Ellen Morgan, Herb Butterfield, Charles Davis, Richard Peel, and William Johnstone. Bob Lamont speaking. Here again is Thomas Highland.
Paris, France, in the year 1673 will be our next concern. That was the year almost everyone had the virus, the deadly kind, or so they thought. It's listed in my files as the lethal habit of the Marquise de Brinvilliers. Thank you. Good night.
Facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed our show this time. You can find more from Crime Club, Crime Classics, past episodes of Case Closed, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is working there as well, and you can donate and help support all of this by clicking on that donate button. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.